Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. The other day, it was colder in southern Florida than northern Maine, while some western states had just set daily records for high temperatures. It's been that kind of year, extreme. 2010 is bidding to go into the record books as one of the warmest, but it's the craziness of the weather, rather than just the heat, that has scientists concerned. 2010, they say, stands out for the number and intensity of extreme weather events. It appears climate change is tilting the odds in favor of more of the kind of heat, floods, and even snows that 2010 brought us. Living on Earth's Jeff Young has our story.
Jeff Masters has seen some pretty wild weather. As a hurricane hunter in the late 80s, he flew into the teeth of some of the biggest, baddest storms. Then he co-founded the internet forecasting site Weather Underground. There he keeps track of extreme weather events. And Masters says 2010 is the most extreme yet.
In my 30-plus years of being a meteorologist, I can't ever recall a year like this one as far as extreme weather events go, not only for the U.S., but for the world at large.
Countries covering one-fifth of the planet's land saw record high heat. Drought altered the world's food trade. Floodwaters inundated parts of the U.S. and Asia with frequency that defied statistical expectations.
Isn't that interesting that we have a one-in-a-thousand-year event occurring every few years nowadays?
That's Kevin Trenberth, a meteorologist who heads the climate analysis section at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado.
And so it's the changes in the extremes where we really notice the climate change. Droughts and floods and heat waves that are outside of the bounds of what we would normally expect. The global warming component is rearing its head in that way.
And 2010 could be a harbinger of things to come, says Heidi Cullen, a climatologist with the nonprofit research group Climate Central.
I actually do get a sense that we are really getting glimpses of what the future will look like through some of these extreme events that we've experienced.
I asked these three experts, Cullen, Trenberth, and Masters, to choose their top examples of the year's weather extremes. Their list tells us a lot about the interplay of climate change and weather. And it carries a warning about the storms on the horizon for coming generations. Remember Snowpocalypse? Snowmageddon? Those monster storms dumped record piles of snow on the mid-Atlantic, including Washington, D.C. This snowball battle in Washington's DuPont Circle wasn't the only fight the snow brought on.
That war of words about what this storm means for global warming.
It's just another nail in the coffin of the whole global warming thing.
The Capitol's most prominent climate change denier, Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe, got attention with an igloo on the National Mall.
They put a sign on top saying Al Gore's new home.
But climate expert Kevin Trenberth says the senator's take on the storm is, well, a bit of a snow job. Increased precipitation events, whether rain or snow, are just what computer models of climate change predict.
That's actually very much a symptom of warmer sea temperatures off the coast that are providing the extra moisture to produce that huge amount of snow. It's not a sign that global warming is not here, quite the contrary, in fact.
That extra moisture and warm temperatures kept feeding severe storms in the U.S. Nor'easters soaked New England in late March. A deluge hit coastal North Carolina in October. Record rains fell in Oklahoma City in June. And in May, disaster struck Tennessee.
Massive flooding has left at least a dozen people dead. Thousands of people have been evacuated after an astonishing 13 inches of rain fell over a two-day period.
That rain event was equivalent to a 1-in-1,000-year event.
That's Weather Underground's Jeff Masters.
You could have to go back to the Civil War to look at any kind of disaster that impacted Tennessee as great. And the city of Nashville was basically underwater. And I might add that the record-high temperatures were set all up and down the East Coast on the few days accompanying that storm event. And again, when you have record-high temperatures, you can have record amounts of water vapor present in the atmosphere capable of causing heavy rains.
By midsummer, it was the heat Masters was tracking, first in the eastern U.S.
Well, the record heat was concentrated in the mid-Atlantic region again, so not only did they have Snowmageddon, but they had their hottest summer on record in the D.C. area. So maybe the legislators there were trying to be told something. I don't know.
Then in September, the West Coast felt the heat.
A record-breaking heat wave making L.A. feel more like Death Valley. In downtown Los Angeles yesterday, thermometers topped out at 113 degrees, an all-time high.
Through October, more than 4,100 record highs were reported around the U.S. About 1,500 record lows were posted in the same time, a high-to-low ratio of about 2.5 to 1. But the U.S. heat wave paled compared to what much of the rest of the world endured this summer.
Forest fires have killed at least 25 people and left thousands homeless in central Russia as heat wave grips much of the country.
Moscow had never before hit 100 degrees. This summer, it hit that mark five times in 10 days. Again, Climate Central's Heidi Cullen.
What we saw happen in Russia this summer was so fascinating because we saw that it had a global reach, right? They stopped exporting wheat. They lost essentially 30% of their wheat yield. You know, and from a statistical standpoint, you know, the kinds of statistics just fascinate me. When you look at the July temperature anomaly in Moscow since 1950, technically it was essentially like a 1 in 100,000 year event. That's how intense it was. I mean, it was just off the charts.
18 countries set records for high temperatures. Jeff Masters mapped them as the extreme heat covered more and more of the planet.
The warm temperatures covered a record amount of the Earth's surface. We've never seen 20% of the Earth's surface experience their all-time record high in one year. Now, that's not to say that every point in those countries set an extreme record, but certainly in Russia, a good portion of Russia hit their all-time extreme records. In Pakistan, they hit 128.5 degrees Fahrenheit, which is the hottest temperature ever recorded in Asia. And Southeast Asia had its hottest temperature on record when Burma hit over 116 degrees this summer.
Masters says the same rare weather pattern that baked Russia, a sort of kink in the jet stream over Asia, also had another effect.
And so, again, all that heat allowed for more water vapor to evaporate into the air and caused heavier precipitation than otherwise would have happened.
Southern China has been devastated by floods and landslides caused by weeks of torrential rain. In Sichuan province, some parts have been hit with the heaviest flooding in more than 150 years.
First China, then Pakistan. Some 20 million people were affected in Pakistan, as roughly a fifth of the entire country was underwater.
In Pakistan, it was that nation's Katrina, its worst natural disaster in history.
Now, this is by no means an exhaustive list for 2010's weather extremes. The Atlantic hurricane season was also very active, and the Pacific saw a shift from the periodic warming, known as El Niño, to the cooling called La Niña. What climate and weather experts like Masters, Cullen, and Trinberth see in this year's wild weather is a mix of natural variability and a changing climate. NCAR's Kevin Trinberth says the natural variability still reigns supreme.
But the global warming signal is always in the background, and it's always going in one direction. And it's when the natural variability is going in the same direction as the global warming that we're certainly apt to break the records.
So journalists seem especially prone to asking this question when there is, say, a big flood or a heat wave. And we want to know, is this global warming? What do you say?
That's really not the right question, because we can't attribute a single event to climate change. But I would contend that every event has a climate change component to it nowadays. And a different way of thinking about it is to try to look at the odds of that event happening. And with some of the events that we've had this year, it's clear, even though the research has not been done in detail yet, that the odds have changed, and we can probably say that some of these events would not have happened without global warming, without the human influence on climate.
Climate Central's Heidi Cullen agrees. She likes to say there's no lone gunman theory of climate change causing weather events, but the data can reveal warming's extra push. And that's just what scientists were able to do in a study of the deadly heat wave that gripped Europe in 2003. Cullen says they ran two models, one with a steady, unchanging climate, another with a climate altered by greenhouse gas emissions.
In that world where we have had our fingerprint through fossil fuel burning and deforestation, that world produced a heat wave like the one we saw in Europe with a much greater frequency. So global warming doubled or possibly quadrupled the chances of that event happening.
Cohen writes about that study in her book, The Weather of the Future. She explores what studies like that can tell us about the weather to come.
They showed that by 2040, the 2003 type of summer that we saw in Europe would likely be happening every other year. And by 2070, the European heat wave of 2003, that would be a relatively cool summer. And so I think, you know, when you do that thought exercise and fast forward through time, you begin to really see how big of a problem this becomes for society.
That 2003 heat wave, Cullen reminds us, killed more than 30,000 people and cut crop harvests by nearly a third.
This year makes me nervous. It really does.
A closing thought from Weather Underground's Jeff Masters.
2010 could very well be the sign that the climate is beginning to grow unstable. That's what we're bequeathing to our kids. And I have a 14-year-old as well that I think is going to be looking back fondly on, you know, years like 2010, saying, you know, it wasn't so bad then.
You can hear more from these weather experts and see the weather and climate data and studies mentioned in this story at our website, loe.org. For Living on Earth, I'm Jeff Young.